Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A massive education bill would mean takeovers of two state universities, plus change how a state-funded private university grant is awarded, disqualifying more than 60% of current recipients.
If we're turning it into a need-based program, as opposed to an entitlement program that whether you're low income and need it, or a billionaire, you're entitled to it.
Also tonight, should eye exams for newborn babies carry the force of law in Florida?
Senator, it's the compromises and collaboration that we do here in the Senate.
We'll also get the latest on an age-old fight between insurance companies and trial lawyers and discover that some members of the legislature want to help Floridians make their marriages healthier. We've reached the midpoint of week five in the nine-week Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Well, before we get into anything else this evening, let's get into the constitutional requirement that causes the legislature in Florida to come together once a year, and that is the budget. Florida's House and Senate are closing in on approving their respective budgets, and they're looking forward to beginning negotiations, potentially as early as early next week. The two chambers are at odds in certain key areas, though, and are aligned elsewhere. They are relatively close on environmental spending, with an emphasis on water quality, and plans to allocate roughly $650 million. But on land acquisition for conservation, which is done through the state's Florida Forever program, the House is asking for $20 million, and the Senate wants more than six times that amount. The two are about $150 million apart on teacher pay raises. The Senate wants $500 million, while the House plan goes higher at $650 million. The two proposals bookend Governor Ron DeSantis' ask of roughly $600 million to make average starting teacher pay $47,500, which both chambers are trying to get close to. Senate President Bill Galvano says talk with the House will begin soon.
We've now teed up our budget to take it up on third reading tomorrow. As you heard me say, I feel like we'll get our work done and be in a position to start having conversations with the Florida House on allocations early next week.
Both chambers have different schemes for a potential pay raise for state workers, as long as we're talking raises. The House earmarks $181 million to give raises to those making less than $50,000 a year. The Senate's plan would give a 3% raise to state employees across the board, which would come out totaling about $250 million. The Senate's overall proposed budget totals $92.8 billion, the House slightly less, $91.4 billion. That's a 0.4% increase over the current fiscal year. The House Education Committee is looking at a plan to merge Florida Polytechnic University with the University of Florida and New College of Florida with Florida State University. The proposal was filed Monday and has since gotten mixed reactions. We get the story from Blaze Ganey.
Palm Bay Representative Randy Fine says despite what some people might think, the idea to merge the schools didn't come out of thin air.
This bill that we're presenting today, this PCB, is the culmination of months of work by the committee that I run, the House Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee, who spent months looking into the efficiency of financial aid of our universities and our Bright Futures program.
The legislation would change the state's Bright Futures program from the way it's currently run. Right now, high schoolers who earn a 3.0 to 3.5 GPA have 75% of their first 2 years of higher education paid for, whether it's a university or a college. Fine says economically that makes no sense.
75% of a state university is worth a whole lot more than 75% of a state college. And so people go, hey, I'd rather get a bigger value than a smaller value. And so 75% of the people who have this choice choose to go to a university.
Fine's bill would change it so that the value matches the reward.
Hey, for those Medallion scholars, you can continue, if you so choose, to get 75% of your tuition paid at any of our 12 or 10 state universities. Or you can get 100% of your tuition paid for at a state college.
If you listen closely, you might have noticed that Fine joked about 12 or 10 universities. But it's no joke. It's exactly what his bill would do.
It would require that Florida Polytechnic University and New College be merged into the University of Florida and Florida State.
Fine says his reasoning is mainly based on price.
In addition to whatever tuition a student is paying, on average, the state, we the taxpayer, our constituents, pay $28,208 per degree that is issued. That's what we're appropriating. That's what we pay on average. But not at New College of Florida. At New College of Florida, we spend $197,681 per degree, seven times as much.
At Polytech, tuition costs taxpayers a few thousands less than at New College. But Bob Stork, a Board of Trustee member at Polytech, says their tuition costs more because their students do better.
We had a big impact study done by Rick Harper. He's very, very well recognized. And Florida Poly graduates can expect a return on their investment, an ROI, of three times better than the average university state system, Florida university state system.
But the biggest concerns came from people worried about another change Fine's legislation would make.
It would also change the requirement for our EASE and ABLE scholarship. This is a scholarship that today is neither merit-based nor means tested.
Currently, to receive the scholarship, you must be an undergraduate at a private institution in Florida and have at least a 2.0 GPA. Fine thinks it should be limited to those who are financially needy.
If we're turning it into a need-based program, as opposed to an entitlement program that whether you're low income and need it or a billionaire, you're entitled to it.
The change would disqualify between 50 and 60% of those who currently get the scholarship. But Sam Mule, a student at Flagler College, a private institution, says he does need the grant.
220 hours a year. In order to make the $2,841 currently afforded to me by EASE, I would have to work an additional 110 hours a semester to cover my tuition costs. That's 110 hours not studying, volunteering, participating in extracurricular activities, or contributing to the community as a whole.
Carl Willett, who earned an associate's degree at Kaiser in Jacksonville, says he wouldn't have been able to go to school at all without the money.
EASE, if it wasn't for it, I wouldn't have been able to go to school, period. That means that I wouldn't have been able to get the 10 certifications in IT that I actually have today.
After public testimony, many legislators spoke against the thought of leaving more than 50% of students that receive the grant high and dry. But Fine says hard choices is what he was hired to make.
There's no one who's going to stand up here and say, hey, it's great to take away people's scholarships or it's great to close a university. That doesn't mean it's not the right thing. I was asked to do this job because I have no fealty to any of these schools. My goal is for us to provide the best higher education we can at the lowest possible cost. Because if this bill goes into effect as designed, tens of millions of dollars will be available. We could increase the size of the EASE and ABLE grant.
The bill passed the committee, and Senate President Bill Galvano is already weighing in. He says he has a different view on what's done with the EASE grant.
You know, I chaired Ed Approps for a chunk of my Senate career and have found those programs valuable. They ultimately save money for the state. So, yes, it will be in the as part of our overall discussion, but we have a different view.
I'm Blaze Ganey.
A bill that would have mandated newborn babies be given a certain eye exam just got a drastic overhaul by way of a strike all amendment. Proponents of the original say it's now watered down, but Ryan Daly reports some are glad to see what they feel is progress.
Before this week, Senator Gary Farmer's bill would have required medical professionals give newborns an eye test that can catch things like cataracts, or worse. The test would involve using eye-dilating drops on the baby, then a doctor would look into the eye using an ophthalmoscope to detect abnormalities. But after a strike-all amendment filed by Farmer was adopted, the bill now calls only for a pamphlet with information on the eye exam to be given to parents.
Senator, it's the compromises and collaboration that we do here in the Senate.
The pamphlet would be written by the Department of Health and distributed by an OBGYN to expecting parents. Farmer says the compromise is still progress.
I think there was concerns about a mandate, as you heard in Senator Bean's question. I think some others had concerns about the parent rejecting. And so we feel that this pamphlet will provide the information necessary for parents to make an informed decision.
J.C. Singh is a pediatrician who practices in Tallahassee. She spoke on behalf of the American Association of Pediatric Ophthalmologists, which supports the bill after the strike all. But as it was originally written, Singh was concerned about the eye drops. She told the Senate Health Panel why.
These are typically sympathomimetic drops and can have very serious side effects for infants. Once these drops are put in the baby's eyes, it is estimated that about 80% of these eye drops enter the tear duct of the baby and then are absorbed into the baby's bloodstream.
Some of those side effects, according to Singh, can threaten newborns' cardiovascular, gastrointestinal, and central nervous systems. Singh says there is a protocol in place for eye screening in newborns.
They are examined by a pediatrician or a family practice doctor or an ophthalmologist, usually within the hospital with an ophthalmoscope.
Democratic Senator Lori Berman sees value in the compromise.
I am a little sad that we have had to water the bill down so significantly, but I think that for us to be here and discussing it and giving out an electronic pamphlet that will be required will at least get the word out.
But as the pediatric group and some lawmakers are placated by the bill's overhaul, not everyone is as happy to meet in the middle.
Well, Joey was a normal, healthy, beautiful little boy, and shortly after his second birthday, he said, Gamma, I, and he was screaming with pain.
Pam Bergsma has been lobbying for newborn eye exam legislation for about 20 years, since her grandson died from a deadly cancer of the eye called metastatic retinoblastoma. It can metastasize to the brain if not dealt with quickly.
This is a pediatric cancer. It's one of the most common cancers in children and the most common eye tumor in children, affecting approximately 1 in 12,000.
But Bergsma says her advocacy on the issue isn't only in the interest of preventing retinoblastoma.
First of all, this is not about retinoblastoma. It's about making sure every child has the best sight possible. And the number one thing we're looking for in those newborn eyes is cataracts. One in every 677 live births is presenting with something that is going to take their sight or worse.
Bergsma still wants eye exams to be mandatory. Speaking in committee and wearing a pin that says her grandson's name, she attempted to rebut pediatrician J.C. Singh's claims about eye drops, but only had 1 minute to speak.
Now that tiny little newborn pupil, it just needs the simple little eye dilation to drop for decades. They have done large national and international studies on these drops. And yes, I can't talk about it, but it's all right here.
Thanks so much.
Regardless, the amended bill, now only allowing for the distribution of a pamphlet, is moving forward in the Senate, having passed the health panel unanimously. A House bill is filed that is identical to Farmer's original measure, mandating the eye exam. It hasn't yet gotten a first hearing. I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida's property insurance rates keep climbing. Hurricanes are just one reason. Insurance companies also blame the trial lawyers.
What's happening here is twice a year for your homeowner's insurance are getting two rate increases.
And the Florida legislature takes a step towards ensuring more of the state's marriages are healthy, at least on paper.
They're fixing to do something that is going to have lifelong consequences for them and their families, and everybody in their family.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by Cloud Navigator, providing cloud computing services and creating secure and productive workplaces for businesses and government agencies. Cloud Navigator, a Microsoft Cloud Platform partner operating throughout the Southeast. On the web at cloudnav.com.
If you own a home and you have homeowner's insurance, something you're required to have as long as you're paying a mortgage, you've probably noticed rate increases on a pretty regular basis. William Stander, executive director of the Florida Property and Casualty Association, says there's a few reasons for that.
Well, the first reason is because Florida is a peninsula and we have hurricanes coming at us from three different directions. And as we've seen, those hurricanes can and do hit, and they cause a tremendous amount of damage. And insurance companies pay those claims, and a lot of money goes back out the door.
Now, that's to be expected in Florida, but Stander says there's another reason. He cites claims still coming in for Hurricane Irma damage 2 years after the fact.
You've got a industry of attorneys and contractors who are out there hanging tags on people's doors saying, I think you've got roof damage, give me a call and we'll get you a new roof. And for the homeowner, honestly, it's kind of a no-risk play. And for the attorneys and the contractors who can file thousands of these lawsuits, even if any of them stick, that's money in the pocket.
Combine these factors, and Bob Ritchie, founder and CEO of Tampa-based American Integrity Insurance, says higher rates are inevitable.
That's a direct pass-through back to the consumer. So what's happening here is twice a year for your homeowner's insurance are getting two rate increases, 10 to 15, 20%, even more because of what the trial bar has done. Then on top of that, a reinsurance rate increase.
Reinsurance is the insurance carried by insurance companies. If that seems redundant, there's a reason. It's because nearly all of the big national property insurance companies fled Florida in the wake of the very active 2004 and 2005 hurricane seasons. Much smaller companies like Bob Ritchie's jumped in to meet the need. But lacking the resources of the major insurers, they had to buy lots of reinsurance to cover their claims in the event an unusually high number of claims poured in. And Ritchie says another problem emerged in 2017. That's when the Florida Supreme Court struck down a law limiting attorneys' fees.
Now the trial bar is able, just under the threat of it not being rare and exceptional, present and settle many out-of-court frivolous lawsuits because we can't afford the risk of going to court. That's what's called the contingency fee multiplier. They can make up to three times their already large numbers of hours and billable rate.
The Florida Property and Casualty Association's William Stander says there is a legislative fix.
The best solution to pulling back on lawsuits is to make attorney's fees have some sort of relationship to the benefit that the policyholder wins. If a policyholder wins a benefit, then the fees should be some relation to that amount.
By coincidence, there are bills teed up in both the House and Senate that would do just that. It's a battle almost as old as time, the insurance industry versus the trial lawyers. And at the Florida Capitol this year, that fight is raging once again. There's a new proposed state scholarship program under debate at the Capitol. Adriana Thomas reports the Sunshine Scholarship Program targets low-income students who are struggling to pay tuition.
In order to qualify, students would need to apply for federal student aid and earn an annual household income of $50,000 or less. Once a student's education is completed, the proposed legislation would require the students to live and work in Florida for the same length of time they receive funding through the scholarship. The program strays from the norm as it focuses on those who are interested in pursuing an associate's degree or trade. Broward Democratic Representative Chevron Jones says it's important to recognize not all students can attend four-year institutions and give them options.
More students in Florida enroll at a college to retool and retrain during the economic downturn, looking to open the doors of opportunity, break the cycle of generational poverty in households, and we want to keep those doors open for them and pump quality members of society into the workforce while decreasing student debt.
The scholarship would pay off 100% of eligible students' remaining balances after all other financial aid has been applied. Jones is hoping the measure will help with student retention rates. According to the Florida Department of Education, in the 2018-2019 school year, the average retention rate was 65%. Jones says the measure will help students like a young woman from his district who faced dropping out after initially struggling to pay her tuition.
all of her loans and everything had paid, but she owed a certain amount. And the amount she paid, she just didn't have the money to pay for it. And so she had to get some help from the school to help, where they have just a small foundation that help individuals like that. This scholarship is for individuals like her. It gives the opportunity for her who works two jobs, who wants to go to school, the opportunity to say, listen, the state will take care of it.
Tampa Democratic Senator Janet Cruz says the bill will help those working their way through school avoid taking out excessive student loans.
The face of the student debt crisis is sometimes assumed to be an upper middle class student who attended a private school, got a degree in humanities or philosophy, and couldn't get a job after that. But that is so often not the case.
Student loan debt has been a widespread issue for many within the U.S. In Florida, 2.5 million student loan borrowers are carrying a combined total of $90.8 billion in student loan debt, according to Financial Aid Services. I'm Adriana Thomas.
Colossal oysters are shrinking in size and in numbers. They once thrived in Florida's northern Gulf Coast. Scientists at the University of South Florida published a study in the journal Biology Letters last week that examines this loss. WUSF's Jessica Mazzaro spoke with the head researcher, Stephen Hester Berg.
Colossal oysters. Can you describe what they look like and where they live? I know you actually brought some in, so can you show me what you bring here?
So I brought in some of the shell sizes that we observed in the past that mm-hmm. kind of are no longer present today,
okay.
At least in Crystal River. You can hold as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
thanks.
It's about, you know, 7.5 inches maximum size.
This is the maximum size back in the day, like 1,000 years ago. And it's starting at the top of my hand and going down past my wrist. So
right.
it's fairly large.
Absolutely.
It's bigger than my hand.
Yeah. And then here's a representative modern oyster from Crystal River. So this is about as large as kind of they get today.
And this is about a little bit larger than just the palm of my hand. So it's a significant difference in size. Can you tell us about your latest study and what it revealed?
Sure. We had kind of two major findings. So we collected, you know, thousands of prehistoric and modern oysters from the Crystal River area. And the first thing we found was we just see a dramatic reduction in body size of these oysters. So again, both decreases in maximum size and the average size. The second thing that we found is we actually investigated the chemistry of these large shells. And we were actually able to show that the size reduction is due to slower adult growth, as well as early mortality of these large individuals. So that kind of gives us some clues as to what's kind of stressing the population today.
So, for example, what would they need to thrive that might be missing?
Well, fresh water is incredibly important for oysters. Probably most people think of oysters as marine organisms, but they're actually estuarine. So that means they're adapted to fresh water, really big changes in fresh water. And if there isn't enough fresh water entering into the estuaries, things like parasites and predators are increased in abundance and often disproportionately affect and kill those large oysters.
So what does the decline of colossal oysters in Crystal River maybe tell us about climate change and the state of Florida's water bodies?
Well, I think it directly ties into that latter part, which is changes in our watersheds. We can't pinpoint an exact cause for this decline yet, but it would be consistent with reductions in freshwater input that we've been seeing in our estuaries more broadly in Florida.
Is there any chance of getting these oysters, number one, back in numbers, but also can we get back to this larger size?
Well, there's been a lot of effort in oyster restoration, so returning those numbers. But what we haven't really focused on is returning that quality of a habitat, which would be described by the size. Now, in terms of that, it might be very challenging to return to a time where we have oysters as large as, you know, 5 to 7 inches. And that could be a variety of reasons why, but one of them is warming climate. As temperature goes up, oysters actually need more oxygen. Consequently, when temperature goes up, oxygen levels decline in our waters. So it's kind of a double whammy for oysters. So that might limit their size recovery.
Stephen Hesterberg, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was WUSF's Jessica Mazzaro speaking with University of South Florida researcher Stephen Hesterberg. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, in 2018, more than 156,000 people got married in Florida. That same year, about half that number got divorced. To curb the state's divorce rate, lawmakers want to create a handbook couples can read before they get a marriage license. Robbie Gaffney has more.
Right now, to get married in Florida, couples have to read, or at least obtain, a handbook written by the family law section of the Florida Bar. Now lawmakers want to add another book. Two different proposals to create that book are gaining traction in the legislature. Both proposals aim to prevent divorce, but have different ways of doing so. Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley's bill would create a committee to craft the language of his handbook. Baxley says he wants couples to have important conversations as early as possible.
They're fixing to do something that is going to have lifelong consequences for them and their families and everybody in their family.
Baxley says while couples can do research on their own, most don't.
The thing is, this is where everybody walks by the door, and a lot of them have done absolutely nothing and have not talked about these things that are in this guide.
The exact language of the handbook has not yet been written, but its topics would include conflict management, communication skills, financial responsibilities, and more. Couples could opt out from reading Baxley's handbook if they read or access material that covers the same topics in the book. In Jacksonville Republican Representative Clay Yarbrough's proposal, no committee would be created to draft the handbook. Yarbrough already has the language worked out, and if his bill is signed into law, that would be the language going into the book. Yarbrough says it doesn't include controversial topics.
It's all very positive information. It doesn't get into definition of marriage. It doesn't get into anything that I would deem to be controversial. It's just good information that you would have available to you when you go to get your license. And you can do what it says if you want, but you don't have to. There's no mandate that you do anything in it, but we just want to try to help families and marriages succeed in Florida.
Yarbrough's bill would require Floridians to read or access both the current handbook by the Florida Bar and new handbook to get a marriage license. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Adriana Thomas and Jessica Mazzaros. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.